back in, everyone, to a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are so excited to be joined by our guest today and to be bringing you the show that we're bringing you, our very first coverage of a production at Yale Rep Theater. Joining us to talk about the piece, we've got director Liz Diamond. She is currently directing the production of Escaped Alone, which is playing March 8th through the 30th at Yale Repertory Theater. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting yalerep.org. This is a fantastic production, and we are so excited to dive more into it. So with that, let us bring on our guest, Liz. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me, Andrew.
I'm so happy that you're here. I'm so excited that we are finally getting to cover work at Yale Rep Theater, and particularly this one, Escaped Alone. This is an exciting show. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, I'll start with the fact that this play dates from 2015. It was written by the great contemporary British playwright, Carol Churchill, whose works I'm sure many of your listeners will know and love. Quite famous among her works is the play Cloud Nine, which premiered in the United States, I believe, in 1979 or 1980, and was a tremendous hit. It was directed by Tommy Toon here. And soon after that, a wonderful play called Serious Money and, you know, Light Shining in Buckinghamshire, The Skryker. Many of Carol Churchill's works have graced the stages here in the United States, both in New York and across the country and in professional theaters and university theaters. And she's taught everywhere. And this play, one of her more recent works, was written when she was 77 years old. And it features four women, all in their 70s, who are convened over a series of summer afternoons in the garden of Sally, having a cup of tea, chatting, nattering away the afternoon. All women are retired or out of work. And they're sharing jokes, anecdotes, memories. And over the course of these afternoons, which, as perhaps one might expect, may seem at first to be one continuous afternoon, and whether it is one continuous afternoon or one series of afternoons going over the course of a summer is left rather delightfully ambiguous by the author. As these women grow over the course of these conversations, more intimate with one another, squabbling with one another, contradicting each other's accounts of events that they experienced together, and then periodically revealing in monologues that are not heard by the other women, intimate dilemmas, sufferings, griefs, unresolved conflicts, great aching acres of depression, all of which makes the play sound like it would not be, you know, a great uplifting experience. And yet it is. It's an extraordinary group portrait of women of a certain age who are getting on and carrying with them all of the, you know, how to put it, barnacles of life experience, sufferings that we all accumulate over the course of a long life, and are somehow holding one another up. And I don't really want to give away one of the big secrets of the play, which is that the scenes in the garden, this little Edenic refuge where these women gather, if you will, protected by this lovely little green space that Sally has created in her modest back garden, right? These scenes are intercut, broken open by interventions from what seems to be a parallel universe, by one of the women who reports on what happened to the earth, to the world, to life itself, as if from a place perhaps in some parallel future universe, looking back on how we ended. And this juxtaposition is incredibly moving. It's in many ways, I think, a meditation on all of the universes within which we live, the ones that exist within ourselves, whereby I can be talking to you and enjoying this conversation, and somewhere in my mind or heart, other thoughts and images, memories, conflicts are percolating, right? Running parallel through this river of conversation. And outside the walls of the rooms we both sit in as we speak, all kinds of havoc is being wrought by human beings on one another, by human beings on the planet, right outside our doors. And the play toggles back and forth between the domestic and the epic and global in a way that's really uncanny. And it's especially uncanny because it's essentially a play that lasts barely 50 minutes. So it's an extraordinary work of theater art. And I think audiences would, you know, find it wonderful. It's a beautiful play.
I love that. What an incredible piece it sounds like. So I'm curious to know, I mean, you listed off the wide works that the playwright Carol Churchill has done or is known for. Have you always been a fan of Carol Churchill's work?
Yes, I have. I think I first read way back in the late 70s. I think I came across Cloud Nine, which was one of her early, extremely popular works. And then the play Fen, which she wrote with Joint Stock, the company, the collective theater company that was co-founded by Max Stafford Clark and William Gaskill in the 70s, and which was this product of 70s revolutionary idealism, right? And Carol was part of this collective and wrote plays based on the research performed by members of the company, brought into a rehearsal process, shared, which she would then take away and sculpt and compose into a play. And these plays hit me like a truck. The play Fen, which, you know, really recounts in vivid detail, it's a kind of documentary of life in Fens, which is a very poor rural section of Southeast UK. Mad Forest, which takes place in a sort of fictional Eastern European country, probably like Romania under the Ceausescus. Later on, the play Skryker, which is this incredible story of these two young urban women who are, it's hard to describe, but whose lives are invaded by this figure known as the Skryker, who's this strange little androgynous imp. I saw many of her works in New York. In fact, the titles I've just mentioned, I saw in production. And I now teach these plays to my students in directing at the David Geffen School of Drama. And they're fantastic plays on which to teach this art. Yeah.
It's amazing. That is fascinating. So how did you decide you wanted to do the show at Yale Rep?
I was reminded of this play by my brilliant and beloved colleague, Catherine Sheehy, who's a dramaturg and the chair of dramaturgy and dramatic criticism at the drama school here at Yale. And, you know, we were kicking around ideas. I wanted to pitch ideas to Yale Rep. I love, this is my home theater. I've been a resident director here for over 30 years. And I hadn't done a production here at the Rep since just prior to COVID. So I was eager to get back out on stage and, you know, was just brainstorming. And, you know, if you're thinking about contemporary writing, Carol Churchill's name is going to come up. And it did in our conversation. And Catherine said, well, did you see Escaped Alone when it came to New York? And I did not, which actually now I'm happy that I didn't, in fact. It was the British production that was quite wonderfully directed by James McDonald that came to the United States, I think in 2017, but you may want to check that. And I got a hold of the script and I read it and I connected immediately to this text. I just loved this play. And, you know, in no small measure, because I identify with the women inside this play. You know, I'm within range of their age group and I am absolutely moved at the opportunity to have women of a certain age on stage and have their lives and their their wit and their, you know, humanity on display.
Fantastic. So tell me about the rehearsal process and working with four amazing actresses who are, you know, in spitting distance of 70.
It's been a blast. I mean, the cast, Latonya Borsay, who plays Mrs. Jarrett, Sandra Shipley, who plays Sally, Mary Lou Rosato, who plays Vi, and Rita Wolfe, who plays Lena, are, I mean, it's like working with, you know, four virtuoso musicians on a great piece of chamber music. They are incredibly in tune with one another. And I say that across the board, they've become good friends. Rehearsal rooms, it's one of the things that I get a kick out of when I go into rehearsal is getting everybody to sort of corralling this wonderful company of women to start the work has always takes a few minutes because everybody's chatting away and having marvelous conversations. And it often feels exactly like the life inside the garden. And so, you know, you sort of are segueing from, you know, the real life corollary to the work inside the play, and the boundary is quite blurred, but they are consummate professionals. And I one of the fun features of rehearsal has been that because this play is quite short and because the language is on the page can seem quite elliptical, conversations are sort of interleaved. Two people may be having a conversation, two other people may be having a conversation. Somebody will say a sentence or a phrase that actually refers back to something said a few lines above. And so working with this company, a huge part of our work, at least for the first 3 weeks, was essentially parsing the text together, mining it to make sure we understood exactly who was speaking to whom and to what they were referring to, and creating family trees and detailed biographies of each character, always, of course, rooted in evidence in the text. But of course, because that, in a sense, the play feels a little bit like, you know, an archaeological dig, there's material embedded in the text from which one must extrapolate, so to speak, a story. And that's a wonderfully creative part of the rehearsal process with actors. And these actors are really good at it. And they would come in with wonderful offers. We also did a lot of improvising, because sometimes a scene will start and you'll realize that they're in the middle of a conversation that could have begun several minutes ago. And so we would improvise those conversations and then find our way into the text. And of course, there's not that much physical action. These women are essentially sitting around in a garden. So this particular production didn't involve a huge amount of choreography from the point of view of, you know, great stage athletics. But the devil is in the details. And even when somebody shifts a position in a chair, it wants to be in some way resonant. And so that kind of work has been part of my task as well.
It's so super. I am blown away with the ideas and the methodology being applied here. This is so wonderful. What fantastic work you're creating.
Well, it's been really interesting. Some of our method emerges from the research that I did on Joint Stock, the theater company that Carol Churchill was a very important member of in the 1970s. A company which kind of not only created a sort of political ethos of, you know, collective decision making and so forth, but also a practice, a kind of method for working on particularly new material. And it essentially, as part of, you could say, the democratizing project of Joint Stock, whereby actors were not to be seen as mere, you know, tools for a director to have their way with, but were bona fide partners in a rich creative process, which of course is always how an actor should be treated and understood, because actors are absolutely autonomous artists. But the work that Joint Stock developed was a kind of, and it's not unique to Joint Stock, I don't wish to suggest that they invented this out of thin air, but a very heavy on improvisational work, very heavy on what you might call extracurricular research, research done outside of rehearsal and brought back to share. in which the actors aren't just researching their own character's life, but the sort of the sociological context of the play, the historical context of the play. And all of these actors dove into that with great heartiness. And Rita Wolf, who plays Lena, who was a member of Joint Stock, participated in a number of their productions early in her artistic life, was able to bring her own terrific lived memories and expertise to the project. And we all found that wonderfully helpful.
Fabulous. I'd love to know, what message or thought are you hoping that audiences will walk away with from this play, especially since it's very topical?
At risk of sounding coy, I don't like to prescribe a message to the spectators. I think that the extraordinary thing about the theater is, frankly, how democratic it is, right? Every single person in the audience is having a unique, a shared experience, to be sure. But even a person sitting 3 feet from me is having a different experience, right? And by virtue of their lived, their life, their biography, what they had for dinner that night, you know, how difficult it was to put the kids to bed, whatever it is that they're bringing into the space is going to impact their reception, right? And I just think, wow, you know, obviously this play treats on themes of, you know, of friendship and, you know, what constitutes a life well lived and what constitutes, what's memory and how do we hold it and how do we trust it? And what does it mean that two people who went through the exact same experience can have two such radically different memories of what happened, and how do they navigate that in their friendship? These are some of the things that I think you get to reflect on when seeing the play. And then, of course, in this epical way, the play invites us to consider, you know, what does come after? You know, what will be left behind? You know, will it be a wasteland, a toxic waste dump? Will it be, you know, a flood? Will it be fire? So it's a tremendous meditation on how to live. And I guess the joy of it for spectators is going to be that they can leave the theater and it won't be 11 o'clock at night. It'll be barely 9, and they can go and sit together and chat about this really delicious, playful, and by turns heartbreaking and deeply funny play.
It's so wonderful. Oh, that's so wonderful. Tell me, how was the reception when Escaped Alone first premiered, and how is your production at Yale Rep going to be different?
I don't know how different it, I mean, it's a different audience. It's a different country. I think we have a different relationship to social class. We have perhaps somewhat slightly different relationships to race and gender. And of course, we're in a different time, right? It's 2024. We've been through COVID. We've been through, you know, the murder of George Floyd in 2020 and the social justice uprising that followed that, along with the other devastating murders and crimes against Black people that have occurred. We've been through so much, and we're still going through so much as we face another election, that I mean, I don't think it can help but be a different experience for audiences, actually. You know, I think the London production was praised for terrific acting and for, you know, the complex cocktail of wry wit and, you know, emotional sucker punches that the play carries. And I believe the company here is producing very powerful experiences in this way too.
That is stellar, absolutely stellar. My final question for this first part of our interview is, who do you hope have access to Escaped Alone?
Everybody. I mean, I'm not sure it'll be, you know, a 10-year-old's cup of tea, honestly. There are, you know, most plays I direct, I love to imagine an audience of children. And every so often, I'm lucky enough to have an audience of children, and it's a fabulous audience. Not sure that this play would really be a treat for children. I think though, for young adults, it's almost like a sneak preview. And it creates an opportunity to sort of just reflect on time itself, and you know, what multitudes one life can contain. I think for people who have lived a little bit longer, it's an incredible opportunity to reflect on the nature of friendship and what survives and what doesn't and why, and on the ways in which we shut out the what you might call crimes against humanity that we participate in committing, you know, whether it's leaving the lights on and wasting electricity, or, you know, buying too much plastic, or, you know, voting or not voting in ways that harm society, and, you know, passively allowing for the ongoing violence that we see in our world. The play invites that. And I think that, you know, for students of the theater, it's an incredible opportunity to be in the presence of a great contemporary writer, a poet of the theater, right? And terrific actors, you know, the whole nine yards. There's a wonderful design that I think will appeal to all kinds of folks. It takes no special degrees to see this play. It's a play that I think really will touch the hearts of I hope, loads of people who come in from the region around New Haven and New Haven itself, and not just Yale University. Yeah.
On the second part of our shows, we love giving our listeners the opportunity to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I would love to know what or who inspires you, what playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites.
I'm going to go in no particular order. I'm going to just try to respond as instinctively as I can. An inspiration to me as an artist my whole artistic life has been the playwright Susan Laurie Parks, who is a dear, dear, dear friend of mine and a longtime collaborator. I feel as though I cut my teeth on her extraordinary early plays. I directed several of them in the 1990s and more recently here at Yale Rep and over at ACT in San Francisco in, I guess it was 2018. And I find her poetic imagination sort of without boundaries. She's just, you know, fearless. And like Carol Churchill, a great poet of the theater, an experimenter with form and how form delivers, you know, content. Her theatricalism is extraordinary. The theater, the images, in other words, that she creates for the stage are incredibly moving and important to me. I think I might be like a visual artist manqué. I have zero talent as a visual artist, but I think visually. And playwrights whose works inspire that imagination in me are very exciting to me. So, but also Susan Laurie's work ethic, her profound and sort of clear and cool eye on our culture and on the way we harm one another, but also the way we love one another, has been very important to me, her ethic, her work ethic. And that's been true for me, for so many of the collaborators I've worked with over the years. I'm inspired by the great Russian director, Dmitry Krimov, who's also living and working and now in exile here in the United States, in New York, and who is I would say, not a player, in a sense you could call Dima a poet playwright, but it's works of a tremendous theatrical imagination, less dependent on language than on the materiality of the theater, and, you know, puppets and, you know, light and sound and color and, you know, invented almost surrealistic objects and so on. I suppose, you know, artists that have inspired me just in my in my learning were artists like Bertolt Brecht, Gertrude Stein, very different, of course, but I could list many, many painters. I think the European and American avant-gardes are really where my heart lies. So those are just some, but there are many, many more collaborators. I've worked with Ricardo Hernandez, who's a brilliant set designer, who always makes me think in very rich ways about space and light and color and sound. Yeah.
That is a fantastic list. Some of our favorites right there on it. Susie Laurie Parks, I feel like, can do no wrong. She's just so brilliant. I love her work. So fantastic lists. I would love to know, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
Oh, I don't think I can answer that because I love all of it. I mean, I'm crazy about table work, you know, as it's called, which in most cases is, you know, not a bunch of people just sitting around at a table. There's a lot of jumping around and getting up and trying things is normally a part of it. But I love the deep dive into text that's required, you know, when the play is complex and rich and interesting and gnarly and beautiful. I love the rehearsal process when you're up on your feet and first finding the physical form of the body in space that's going to convey action, dramatic action, conflict. And then tech is incredible. You know, you sort of feel like you're at, you know, I turned around and I was looking up at the house yesterday. I was standing down in front of the stage talking to the actors, and I turned around at Yale Rep, which has an audience, maybe, I don't know, 400 seats, I'm not sure, rising up, you know. And as I looked out, it was dark out in the house, and there were, you know, dozens of computer screens and little blinking lights and people in headsets. And I felt like I was at, you know, a mission control in Houston, right? You know, when they're preparing for a launch, and the concentration and the focus and the chats going on between sound designer and projection designer and, you know, stage manager and deck manager and everyone working hand in glove and simultaneously often, right? I just find so moving because really, you know, the organism of theater making, it's so collective. It's so deeply collaborative. And every single person in that room, it must have been 40 people, maybe more, I'm not even sure. And of course, at Yale Rep, it's a sort of a teaching hospital, right? It's a fully professional theater with, you know, extraordinary professional actors, but we include students in the creative process. My costume designer is a brilliant final year costume designer named Yu Jung Shen. My set designer is an extraordinary young woman named Leah Tubiana. My assistant director is Alexis Woodard, who is one of my students in directing in her second year. Our production stage manager is a final year stage manager. And, you know, so incorporated throughout the project, assistance to the various designers, our students, you know, our lighting design. It's this very thrilling moment when you get into tech and all of these people who've invested so much time and talent into getting to this point are finally in a room together, making it happen. So maybe tech is thrilling, particularly thrilling, but it's all kind of wonderful.
Lovely answer. Absolutely lovely. Well, now we have arrived at my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is what is your favorite theater memory?
Speaking as a spectator, I've had many, many, many incredible moments. And I remember being a very little girl in Boston, wearing my Easter coat and my little gloves and holding the hand of my great aunt who took me to see a production of, get ready, Julie Andrews in My Fair Lady. And it was probably, you know, 1960, I'm not even sure. And after the show, we walked out on the street and this very dashing, lovely young woman was sort of sprinting past us in a pretty green spring coat with a dog in her arms. And Elizabeth Hill, my aunt, stopped and said, "Look, look, that's Eliza Doolittle." And I was probably only 5 years old. And I remember being sort of confused, like, what do you mean? And I was completely thrilled. at that transformation. So that was one sort of, early memories. And then, other extraordinary moments of spectatorship would be sitting in the bleachers at the Brooklyn Armory as the company of Ariane Mnouchkine's Les Atrides entered from this doorway way, way upstage in a deep, foggy light and came toward us, all of them in their extraordinary mask-like makeup and huge, colorful woolen costumes to begin what was going to be, I believe, a 9-hour production of Les Atrides, the House of Atreus, starting with Iphigenia at Aulis. And the sense of this powerful mass of human beings coming toward us to tell us a story, just coming. I'll never forget just that, the physical pressure of collective storytellers. And I guess another would be, oh God, I could go on and on, as you can see, but I've many, many beautiful memories of productions I've been lucky enough to direct, actors who just blew my mind by their work. Yeah.
Those are amazing though. I'm blown away. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for sharing those.
I mean, I'll give you one more.
Oh, please, yes.
The one more would be that when I was, in my early 20s, I was a Peace Corps volunteer in West Africa, in the country of which is now called Burkina Faso. It was at the time called La Haute Volta. And I created with a wonderful friend, a Burkinian theater artist named Prosper Compaoré. We were both very young, a little theater project that went out into the countryside and put on plays in local languages that dealt with contemporary social and political issues, sort of our own version of joint stock, I suppose. I didn't know of joint stock at the time, but it was, a very sort of 1970s era idealistic enterprise. And we worked with a company of 15 actors, many of them young people who had come right out of the countryside themselves, right? A number of our actors were not lettered. They had not gone to school and didn't read or write, Some had gone to university in Ouagadougou. It was an incredible little group of 15 people. And I will just never forget, arriving in our beat up pickup truck in a village and being surrounded by children who would help us unpack our truck and all of our props. And we would go with the kids into the village and collect white ash from the cook fires of the village women. And we would make a big circle in the ground and the kids would help us. And we'd put out, lanterns around the circle and we'd give kids flashlights and we'd tell them, you're going to follow this actor, you're going to follow that actor. And, dusk happens in that region of the world, the Sahel, really quickly, 6 o'clock, boom, the sun goes down. And as soon as the sun went down, you'd start to see people coming through the darkness. This is a part of the world where there was no electric grid, no electricity anywhere. And they'd come out of the darkness and they'd gather around the circle. And then we'd begin to share our stories with them. And I just, that sensation of people gathering and coming together to watch a play. And it was playful, and stories told and was, I remember thinking, I don't think I'll ever feel this close to something essential about the theater art. So I hold that one particularly close.
Absolutely amazing. Wow. Wow. When is your book coming out? My goodness.
Oh my
These
God.
Are so wonderful. Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing those memories. We're so fortunate to be able to hear those. As we wrap things up here, I would love to know, do you have any other upcoming projects or productions that we might be able to plug for you?
Well, you're very kind. Not at the moment. I've been working on an adaptation of a novel that I hope to make happen some point. But no, I mean, I'm going to be plunging back into supporting my students' work. And I hope to be, on the hunt for another play to to pitch and to do, and I will let you know.
Well, we will have to keep our eyes and ears tuned in for the next big thing. And that is a great lead-in to my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Escaped Alone or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
The best way to learn more about the show and to learn more about me would be to go to our yalerep.org website and click on 23-24 season and Escaped Alone. There'll be links to my bio and other information about me and the drama school. And I do hope people will explore those avenues. And we really hope folks will come and see this show. I think everybody will have a good time.
Well, wonderful. Liz, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. This has been so, so wonderful. I've had an absolute blast and I'm so excited about this piece. So thank you again for your time.
It's a pleasure, Andrew. You make it easy. Thank you so much. And yeah, I hope you come and just let me know. But, you know, it'll be a pleasure to welcome you. All rightio.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
My guest today has been the director, Liz Diamond, whose upcoming production of Escaped Alone is playing March 8th through the 30th at Yale Repertory Theater. You can get your tickets and more information at yalerep.org. You are going to want to take this in. This is a wonderful, wonderful show by the great Carol Churchill and directed by the great Liz Diamond. Don't want to miss out on it. It's Escaped Alone, playing March 8th through the 30th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a Stage Whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.